Hi, this is Dr. Carl Goldkamp. A few things I have to say. One is, we personally are involved both as a lifestyle, a ketogenic diet, but also through my 16 years of clinical practice of what is effective. What do people need to take sometimes, all the time, to support their ketogenic diet? You'll get bits and pieces of this ongoing week after week. It's important to be comprehensive. In one way, it's simple. In one way, it's a little bit complicated. Hi, welcome back to the next episode of the Keto Naturopath. Today is not going to be an academic day. We're not going to drill down on the issues of artificial sweeteners or women's health in keto, PMS in keto, menopause in keto, toxic effects of toxins that we find in high-fat diets, all these things that are coming up that I think are certainly worth talking about. And these are topics that I often consider as politically incorrect keto topics, meaning nobody's really covering them because there's no real understanding, or it's distracting, or it makes for questions that are uncomfortable for some. Today, rather, I want to talk about my recent experience. I had went to a family, meaning an in-laws family, wedding, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. First of all, I'm married to an Italian descendant, and which makes my life rather colorful and much more interesting than it would have been. I'm Irish German. So one thing I noticed in marrying this person is that she had far more relatives than I did. When we got married, she had 100 and some odd people to fill this 107 capacity, and I had 7 people in my family, siblings. But beyond that, this was a wedding from her side of the family. I'll leave it at that. You know, we came, started with family visits, and then we attended the ceremony, and then we had the reception after, and then you had the through the night, then you had the brunch, which is really a continuation of the reception after with a little sleep in between, and then it could have gone on from there and there. One is their family has a lobstering background, which is very keto to me. So we had an incredible dinner of lobster and shellfish, and it couldn't get any more perfect than that. And of course, there was the cannoli. What are you going to do with the cannoli? Well, the cannoli had to be eaten. If you do not eat a cannoli at an Italian wedding, then you are ostracized. Not only are you put at a separate table, you're put at a separate table in a different room, if not a different building. And you're never invited back for any more family ceremonies. And I totally understand that. There's exceptions and there's exceptions. So that was the exception, the cannoli, which, by the way, was really, really good. They're mini cannolis. And I had one. But that's not so much the topic that I want to talk about. There's a sadness in this. And the sadness was not about the wedding, the partners being married. It was a gay wedding, which is fine. And it was just, I love to see the bringing together of so many different gene pools of people and their cultures that they bring into the unification. I mean, that's what marriage is all about, is bringing in such vast differences and deciding to make a commitment. This is how I see it anyway. Our marriage is now 22 years, and I don't know how many days and months, years old, and I think it's going pretty strong. And what I'm saying is that when you go to a wedding, it's like being in a mall, it's like being at the beach, it's like being at one of these places that it's really interesting to people watch, except that you are one of the people, and you have to participate. You can't sit outside and be an observer totally. So now I'm 62 years old, which means there's a lot of people on earth that are younger than me. So at this wedding, there was kind of a tiered system. There was the people getting married and their generation, which is in their 30s, I believe, and their friends. And then there was the parents of and the aunts of, and then the cousins of. And if you're Italian, your use of the word cousins extends to a lot of relatives. And so for the 1,500 cousins that were there, it was interesting to see the bodies, the physical representation of the bodies that were there. It sounds very impersonal to say it that way. But what I'm saying is there was a lot of obesity there. And there is a very close relative to my wife who has been type 2 diabetic for a long time, since I've known her, since before we even got married. And my wife's side of the family, they were all diabetic. And their father is unique. He was very much involved in the lobster industry, and he did very well in that. And he changed his diet when I knew him. Stopped smoking, stopped drinking. He didn't know about low-carb, high-fat diet, but he corrected his diet by a lot and dropped a lot of weight. And he did what was necessary. Whereas there's many others that just continue as a type 2 diabetic for the most part. And they get bigger and bigger. They're on insulin. They get on greater and greater amounts of insulin. And they have to do all the things that an exogenous, insulin-driven lifestyle demands. And so let's take one person in particular that I've seen over the last 20 or 30 years, seen this person going from being able to walk to sitting mostly to not being able to walk to being crutches bound. And it is very hurtful to hear, feel this, to see this, to participate in it. And yet you'll do anything to make this person's life easier. You know, if they need their crutches, you'll go get the crutches. If they, you know, you clear the room if you have to clear the room. So it's such a close relative that you do all that's required. But when we visit, you know, as she explains her lifestyle, that, you know, she takes her insulin, and then after she insulin, she has to have crackers. And so she has a lot of carbs because it is required. She's told that that's what she must do to make sure that she sort of mops up the extra insulin that she takes with the carbs, the high carbs. And so it goes on and on. As any listener of this particular podcast knows, that when you drive up your insulin, it simply has almost an instinctual reaction to glucose now to take that glucose out of the bloodstream and put it into the fat cells. And if the fat cells are all tanked up, if they're all boxed up and they can't take anymore, and there is a finite amount of that ability, by the way, it does not go on forever, then they find other organs. It could be muscle, it could be heart, it could be pancreas, it could be liver. And so that's, and all these things have names to them. For instance, when you start parking your extra glucose, which turns into fat, as fat into your liver, they call it NASH is one, which is non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, and the other is a non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is NALF, but they're all the same thing. It's a place to park excess glucose because you've trained your insulin to saying, hey, you see glucose, you take it offline as soon as possible, and you park it into some sort of fat cell or something that has space to accept this. So all your organs get to be fatty organs, all right? So that's, hopefully I'm talking to people that now know that because we've talked about it for so much. That's the general background. We have fatty organs, we have extra fat, we look fat, and this is called visceral fat for the most part, as opposed to cutaneous fat. Okay, but you know those technical terms, and that's about as technical as I want to get. So in looking in the around the room, and certainly to I won't even say endure, it sounds so dispassionate and impersonal, to participate in saying, I want to say, and certainly my wife does, by the way, too, who's benefited greatly by a high-carb, low-fat diet, you know, that when you see people that are on average of 100 pounds overweight, and their average height is around 5 feet to 5 feet 4, and you want to say, you know, I have a few just basic ideas that you might want to try to vastly improve your lifestyle. In going even that far, there is a judgment in that. How do I know that they don't enjoy being overweight? You know, and I don't know that. And I feel I'm way off base to even bring it up. So I don't bring it up. It's just an internal thought that I'm sharing here now. But I think what I saw over the wedding of a couple hundred people anyway, that, you know, the majority were clearly overweight. And there were some exceptions, and I didn't go interviewing, you know, why are you not like everybody else here at this particular wedding? It's just that way. They're an extreme minority, that those were looked normal or even skinny by comparison. As we know, to stereotype, Italian lifestyle is high carbs. And we think of pasta, we think of pizza, and so on and so forth. Pizza is more of a stereotype, but the pasta is not so much. And they're very proud of that. They were very proud of, you know, you bet, the required cannolis were there. And so That's the, it wasn't a test. It's like, enjoy the cannolis. This is a time to celebrate. And we all did. And it was a time to celebrate. So I see on the one hand was a person I got to see decline over the decades. And yet it doesn't, I couldn't find a way in there. I didn't feel it was my role. My wife would make her attempts to say, this is what you need to do. And none of that would make sense. So me being the naturopathic physician had no ranking, no status in that particular aspect. But you also have to ask the questions, does this person want to get better? You know, and now we're dealing with a person in the mid to late 60s, a little older than I am. And either they have lost the faith that, or the belief, they no longer have the belief that they actually can improve their lifestyle by a lot and have a greater freedom, a greater sense of just feeling good throughout the day and don't need the crutches to walk around. She's already lost her feelings in her fingers. So it's the beginning of peripheral neuropathy, which is caused by diabetes. It's pretty standard. And I'm sure her vision's going, but I didn't want to ask about that. I'm not there as a physician. I'm there as the relative. So none of that has changed at all. Meanwhile, a nephew of my wife's family, of both these people that I've referred to, that he's dropped 80 pounds. And though I hadn't seen him in 5 years, in fact, I didn't recognize him in the wedding, he had to come up to me and say, "Hey, Carl," and start talking. And he told me that, you know, he's from this family that are generally very obese, and he had a stomach got banded, and he lost some weight, and then he gained it all back, and then he gained even more weight back. And so, kiddingly, first thing I said to him, I said, "Wow, you are a lighter version of your former self. He says, "Yeah, I am, absolutely." He said, "It's keto. I started keto." And so I asked him how much he knew. You know, their family as a general physician don't really value naturopathic medicine. So my opinion was a little bit like talking to somebody in Greenland about how to raise cattle in Argentina. And so he said, "You know, it's keto. So I just stopped, you know, having carbs." And so I asked, I said, "Well, do you measure, you know, or the amount of foods you, do you know how many carbs you have?" He goes, "Oh, I choose to have like less than 20 a day." And I go, "Well, how do you know that?" He goes, "Well, I sort of read the back and I have a ballpark idea." So whatever his method was in dropping the number of carbs and certainly sugar, obviously, was working for him. He was such a different guy. I did not physically recognize him. I would have liked to have stared at his face more than I did because I wanted to make sure this was the same guy. It was that dramatic a difference. I'm not saying that he was emaciated in any way, not at all. He looked, I'd say 20 years younger from the time I had seen him 5 years ago. So it was tremendous. And so the point, I kind of juxtapose these two particular genetically related people, an aunt to a nephew, and see how did somebody pick up on the general concept of the ketogenic diet and the other being so unwilling to take a step. And when we come to visit this one person who's the type 2 diabetic that I described, that Chanel say, "Oh, I can do keto maybe 3 days a week, but I can't do it for the whole week." You know, I don't know what that means. And I feel badly about saying, I kind of want to break in. I said, "Do you want to save your life before they start taking off limbs?" That would be rude. That would be inappropriate. And yet that would be very truthful. And you may save somebody's life in that regard. So I don't know. It's a situation we all deal with. You want to go, once you discover this for yourself, and I hope you're discovering for yourself first that you've seen your effects in your life, whether it's sleep or stress or weight loss or menstrual regularities or better PMS, or you're no longer PCOS, as we've talked about that in a former podcast, or guys are putting on muscle mass within having great workouts, and you know, it goes in 10 different ways. You know, it's hard to know where to when to speak up and when not to speak up. So the point of my mentioning these two different cases is that one picked it up and he really doesn't know what he's doing, and he did fine. I don't think he has a food scale. I know he doesn't have a glucometer or a ketometer, and he's doing fine. And the other is on medications, on a regular increasing amount of insulin, and the path you can map out what the next couple of years will be, what the next 5 years will be, and I doubt this person will make it to 10 years. Certainly not will not be having all their limbs intact in 10 years from now, given the current course of how it's going for this particular person. So that's sad. So then expanding, if you're looking and listening to this story through my eyes, and we're now at this wedding, which is an outdoor, and it just is a wonderful time, it really was. And you scan the couple hundred people around you, and you'd see that I'd say at least 50%, if not 80%, were obese, would be nothing less than morbidly obese. And you want to say something, and yet you can't. And it dawned on me, like it dawns probably on many of you when you're in these similar contexts, that this is the United States. This is who we are. So two things I think about at this point. Either this country, our health situation relative to obesity and type 2 diabetes and all the other conditions that are associated with that, which are cardiovascular, by the way, and autoimmune, that we're going to have a tremendous change in health as the word passes around about keto, just like this young man picked up and totally changed his life. And he's kind of winging it, but has it down to his own way of doing it. You know, he's a father, has a couple kids and has a job. And so it's a normal life. And oddly, his two kids are very obese. So I would expect that's the next step. That's probably the most hurtful thing when you see young women and young men that are 100 pounds overweight and they're just getting to be 20. And he goes, seriously, wow, world has changed so much. So I expect, my optimism expects that these numbers will change. So if I was to revisit the same sort of wedding situation 10 years from now, I would not see the same percentages of heavy people in attendance. So that's the good part. If it doesn't go that way, then we're going to have a terrible situation. And I cannot imagine that the person I'm thinking most of, close relative, the type 2 diabetic and all the medications, can enjoy her physical life that much. I mean, she's really enjoys her grandchild, enjoys her daughter-in-law and all the family and all these things, but she could not get up and dance. She had to stay seated for the entire evening for the wedding ceremony, and then in attendance by a couple people to go from the wedding to the reception and find a place there. Her husband is not like her, by the way. Absolutely unlike her. So there's a question, you know, how do you convey the message to the people you care about into the sphere of influence that you see on a somewhat regular basis? If you don't see them, you certainly hear them on the phone and shared conversations and catching up on the news and so on. So that was quite a perspective to see. And, you know, it's something we all come across. So what do you do? You know, for me, I appreciate the perspectives of a number of physicians that I've gotten to know through my lifetime. It's like not making dietary lifestyle a religion for yourself, and certainly not foisting your lifestyle choices on anybody else. Being very clear about that makes it a lot easier to participate in the rest of the world, certainly at weddings, because some people would say, well, what are you going to do at a wedding relative to keto? I've never considered that an issue because, you know, there's always going to be meat and fish, or in this case, lobster. Oof, and shellfish. Does it get any better than that? And that's what you would focus on. I didn't have the potatoes or the corn and so on and so forth. And I did have the cannoli because it was the exception to what I did. And I don't really care. It probably might have taken me out of ketosis, but then who knows? I'm back into it, and it certainly, my metabolism knows the path to follow. However, it makes its exceptions on a day-to-day basis. But so the wedding part and what I was going to have to eat was not a big deal. You know, that's, and I could probably do any wedding. But I would feel that to the degree it's honor bound to have that cake or that cannoli or that ethnic food that we're honoring our the former generations by having and having available for everybody to have, it's part of what that ceremony is about. It's part of what that occasion's about. Certainly there's a lot of alcohol. I didn't have a lot. I kept it at wine primarily, because there's a lot of hours of alcohol being available and presented. So you kind of pace yourself and have your water and seltzer, whatever else you can put in there. But I thought I'd bring up this personal, and I know it seems to be a little bit meandering in terms of this conversation, but it's a real world experience that you just want to help people with their lifestyle choices, knowing that their current lifestyle choices is literally killing them, and that you can help. Even now, me being a physician and having this information available, it makes it doubly hard. I've learned to bite my tongue around a number of situations that have to do with family. My wife is an anomaly to that family because of the health choices that she has made. And so she's very impressive in that regard. Very impressive in that regard. So that's the thoughts that I wanted to share with you. So I would say that if I'm passing on words of wisdom, if that's what we're going to call this, is that, yeah, there's times you need to bite your tongue. And if you have an open window to mention something without feeling like you're passing judgment, like, I didn't mention this to anybody, like all the heavy people that I saw, we, you know, made sure that we, I talked to them and kept conversation genuine, because that's who I am, and talked about what we could talk about, or what in common, or whatever. It didn't get into, you know, how do you feel being 150 pounds overweight? You know, if it was one person, but it had to be 50, if not more, that were there. You just let them be that. And the fact that I think part of it is killing them, and then part of that heavy person's daily life style is pretending that that problem doesn't exist. And now we get into the whole psychology thing. It's hard. So it's not black and white. And so what I say to, you know, we have a Facebook group and certainly a following to this podcast now, thank you very much, is that we feel we are right. We feel we are almost righteous in having made some of the choices in our life and creating incredible changes that were beyond our belief. And I share that enthusiasm because I came from a desperately ill, you know, GI situation to no medications for 5 years and devoid of inflammation in terms of gut, which was not even a possibility. So everybody else has stories like that too, whether it's autoimmune, whether it's a Parkinson's or MS or ALS, or it's weight loss and or it's mental clarity, and they're now sort of back to being a student or a professional, or all these things we now can collectively state. These are, in essence, private stories. And they've been so profound in our own life, we almost do get to be so reverent about it that it turns into a little bit of a religion. But keto is not a religion. The keto way of eating, as they say, is not a religion. It's simply something that has pre-existed all of us for hundreds of years, thousands of years. It was in my, and I totally believe this was the ancestral diet. That word's a little bit overused, but the ancestral diet, meaning people were primarily carnivores, and they also had to go through times of famine, and that makes perfect sense, and therefore fasting was part of their evolution. So speaking of fasting, in our Facebook group, we're now kind of, I won't say conducting, we're sort of leading and involving ourselves in a fast, a week-long fast, and people can do it for 12 hours or 5 days or more if they want to, but just sort of sharing notes, a spreadsheet, saying this is what I do, these are the things you can do to, you know, make it comfortable for yourself. I think that for people to pick up fasting as a therapeutic tool, that's a little bit of a medical perspective there, pick up fasting, something they could use once a month, once a quarter, depending how long they do it, call it an extension of what they call intermittent fasting, intermittent fasting covers a lot of areas, so it's kind of a useless term, frankly. But doing fast for 1, 2, 3, I plan to do 5 days this time, but 3 days is, you get a lot of benefit if you can make it to 3 days, through 3 days. It's just something that has changed so many disorders nowadays. And when we think about fasting, you know, fasting was the origin of the ketogenic diet. Fasting was the treatment for epilepsy. And it still is, basically, by another name, a ketogenic diet. And then now you have various, we'll call it advanced research in fasting, like what's happening more at the cellular level. And so you have Dr. Luongo's work at UCLA. It's still fasting, though. However you want to call it, it's fasting. And the fact that it changes your autoimmune system and really gives you a reset, that was known back in time of Hippocrates, well over 1,000 years ago, many thousands of years ago, actually. So it has been around. We're now getting a little more articulate in how we can talk about fasting. But I think learning how to start a fast, continue a fast, and end a fast, which will be one of the things we'll be talking about this time in the Facebook group, these are important things. You know, these are no longer way out things to do. And nor am I saying that you have to be a homesteader out there and greater Montana or Alaska, or you live in the Yukon and these are, we're back to the earth and the word used to be crunchy granola. No, this is something that anybody can do. And so when you fast, you can fast for the greater part of a week, I would say 5 days, and still be at work, you know, and still be quite functional at work. So you're not going to be, oh my gosh, I'm so tired, I can't go to work, I need to fast only when I have nothing else to do in my life. Nope, that's not it at all. Absolutely not it at all. That fasting is a tool. It's something that you should consider doing, and because of all the benefits. So anyway, I've talked about fasting before, and you can go on and on and on about it. And I think it is worth going on and on and on about it. But I just wanted to give you kind of an emotional perspective of where we are in this world and how it interfaces with our own lives. You know, it's nice that it's changed your life. And you don't have to be an evangelist, a keto evangelist, so to say. I know that's the name of a podcast. But, you know, lead by an example. If people ask, tell them. And if they seem to be open to wanting to have that story, but the fastest way to shut down a conversation is talking to somebody who's overweight about how to lose weight and how you can change their diet. You know, just, I wouldn't go there. Be a real person first and create maintain the relationship. Keep the relationship. Don't get stupid and think you're a know-it-all, which is what many people do on keto. They've achieved the results, and now they're going to go out and tell the whole world, and it doesn't work the same for everybody. There's enough of a disciplined background and a education, I think, that behooves everybody to learn about it. And just, it is simple. As, for example, this one guy who lost 80 pounds and really wasn't quite sure what he was doing other than he understood what a carb was, understood what sugar was, and he cut those out and just has veggies, and poof, his life changed. That's traumatic. And sometimes I think you just don't need to say any more than that. When we, in our coaching group, we have people calculate their macros, they use the meters, because I want them to get the fundamentals down. Something they can always return to and get their numbers and find out how they're doing. You know, now it's so convenient. It's taken for granted that everybody has a ketometer. They can take their ketone levels and they can get their blood glucose levels. But, you know, glucometers, things that measured blood glucose as a finger prick, that was a near miracle to have access to that through the 60s and 70s and 80s. And then it came to the hand things. Oh, I think it was in the 90s, probably late 80s. Other than that, you had to go to a doctor's office to get your blood glucose levels. Jeez, now you can do it anytime you want to. You know, and now they have fairly reasonably cost wearable 24/7 glucometers. That's incredible. It's now today's luxury, which is going to be tomorrow's necessity, or it's almost today's necessity already. But this is the kind of great information we can get at our fingertips, no pun intended. So it's a bit of a ramble, but it's a bit of real life by saying, this is where we are. You know, sometimes the simplest thing can be so profound to making a change in a person's life. let's say this guy that I just mentioned. And yet, that didn't register at all for this other person. There's so many levels. Some is just empirical information, data, measuring this, measuring that, getting set up. And others, it's many deep layers of psychology that, you know, the right questions need to be asked in the right way. And many of us don't even have access to that. Don't have access to knowing how to ask those questions to those people to maybe lighten their load, lighten their metabolic load through life and give them a breath that of life, an enjoyment of life they probably hadn't seen in 20, 30, or 40 years. So there's a scariness if you have the power by having that kind of conversation with somebody to change somebody's life, there's a scariness to the person who's receiving that information to saying, if what you say is true, then there's a whole different me that's going to come out. It's no longer going to be this type 2 diabetic that is destined to have their various limbs amputated one at a time and regain a lot of life function. So with that, it is a bit sad. So the upside is that it was a tremendous experience to see so much humanity and enjoyable humanity, so many different people that you would not met in a lifetime, and some people you know over, you've kind of required to keep these relationships up because they're in the family. That was a real joy, and yet there's a real sadness by seeing so many heavy young people and then people who have been heavy and diabetic for so long, and you know where that's going to go. So we all do our part. You start with yourself first. There's some dramatic changes, but don't make this a religion. Don't push this on anybody. Be who you are and be kind. Be kind and offer information when it's appropriate. Maybe somebody's going to notice that you didn't have the potatoes with your breakfast and ask. And that's a great little opening. Say, I'm on keto and it's changed my life. So with that, this is going to be a short podcast, a personal podcast to say, I see the world as you see the world. I don't have any leg up in any aspect. I am with you and I talk to the same people that you talk to for the most part. And let's work together and get this done. Have a great week. Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. For anybody who has any questions, feel free to contact me on our Facebook group, Keto Naturopath, same name as our podcast. I'm open to any questions, and we plod through the good and the bad, the difficult and the easy, week after week.